poquito de lunes a jueves. You
the safari park.
You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Larry, get into bed now.
Come on, Larry! Larry!
Is there no sweeter sound than that of your own name, buried in cheers and applause? I think not. Hey, bullying is such a popular topic now. Why is that? And because it's so popular, it's become overused and misapplied to any and just about every situation, hasn't it? Just Google the word and see what you get. Near the top of the list is an outfit called the National Center Against Bullying. And according to these, quote, experts, unquote, bullying covers acres of no-nos. They break it into four categories: physical, verbal, social, and cyber. There was a time when bullying had a single, precise definition. It only applied to children because there was an assumption made that by the time we reached adulthood, we had developed methods to deal with bullies. And bullying only had one form, physical. Some child goon, usually male, would physically assault. It could be a shove or a punch or a full-on beating. Another, smaller, usually male child, with predictable results. So, okay, National Center Against Bullying will give you that first category. Here's their take on so-called social bullying, where they go off the rails. Lying and spreading rumors. Well, that eliminates 90% of all human communication. Next one is, I love this, negative facial or physical gestures. Menacing or contemptuous looks. There you have it. They want to control your face. I guess it will be what? Massive Botox injections? Or maybe we should all wear masks all the time. Here's another one. Playing nasty jokes to embarrass and humiliate. Well, that outlaws comedy as well. Because there are only two kinds of jokes. Nice ones and funny ones. Next up, they say, mimicking unkindly. That's another form of social bullying, huh? Mimicking unkindly. Well, there goes Jimmy Fallon in Saturday Night Live. They're out of business. Then, encouraging others to socially exclude someone. So, NCAB, the next time there's something going on at your shitty offices, we'll just have everyone in Australia stop in. Otherwise, you'll be exclusionary, won't you? Oh, yes. Lastly, they go into cyberbullying. Get a load of this shit. Abusive or hurtful texts, emails or posts, images or videos. Deliberately excluding others online. Nasty gossip or rumors. And intimidating others online or using their login. Well, that's it for the internet, too. It's over. What these assholes want is everyone lobotomized and living life as one would in The Truman Show, an artificial, sick construct where everyone is nice and supportive and positive and fake. Outfits like the NCAB are a cancer on our planet because they are the fucking bullies. They want to control and alter and direct and silence and stifle so everyone conforms to their perverted, sick version of what life should be. The notion of verbal bullying was once ridiculous. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never hurt me. When did that phrase become obsolete? You never hear it anymore. Almost as if it's been banned. That's one of the favorite words of the bully obsessed, isn't it? Ban. They just love to ban shit. Ban words, ban phrases, ban clothing, ban symbols, ban toys, Ban weapons, ban drugs, ban flags, ban gestures, ban songs, ban colors, ban vehicles, ban bonfires, ban fireplaces, ban anything and everything and everyone that these prolapsed sphincters deem offensive. Hey, look at that. The word ban has a buddy. Offensive. Those two words seem to almost always pop up together, don't they? Just like ham and eggs or salt and pepper. Ban and offensive. Let's look deeper, because prolapsed sphincters are always very careful about the words they choose to advance their agenda, aren't they? The word is the all-encompassing offensive, not rude or insulting or hurtful. The adjective is offensive, the noun, offender. And what happens to bullies who grow up and don't mend their ways, They become offenders, don't they? And an offender is synonymous with what other word? Criminal. So what these assholes are saying is, if you do or say something that we don't like, you're a criminal. They're criminalizing speech and gestures, symbols, thoughts, and people. People that simply don't act or think the way that they want them to think and act. And so they say,
that's offensive. Let's ban it.
Let's look at this more closely. Go back to the essence of bullying. What is the end result of a bully's actions? Well, he uses his superior strength and power to what? What he is doing to his victims, he's controlling them, right? Making him hide his lunch money or take a different route home from school or whatever. Or, to reduce this even further, to get to the core of it, a bully restricts another's freedom. And now we've got legions of righteous, indignant, screaming fucktards and snowflakes. And what are they doing, They are restricting our freedom. To speak, to display, to be heard, to disagree, to represent, to defend ourselves, and be who we are. Now who's the bully? Pretty clear, isn't it? All those clueless shitbags who are so concerned about protecting people from bullies. There's only one response for physical bullies of any stripe. Immediate retaliation of a greater magnitude. If a bully pushes you, you don't push him back. You break his jaw, or his nose, or juice his testicles under your boot. That's how we do it here at the Take No Shit Dojo. You want katas and bows and ceremonial bullshit? We don't have those here. We cut to the chase. One of my favorite fighters of all time is Mike Tyson. Watch some of Mike's fights. He went into them as one should when responding to a bully. No squaring off or getting his opponent's measure or counterpunching. Mike really didn't fight. He exploded. He was a human hand grenade with the ability to pull his own pin. And down they went, challenger after opponent. I saw him fight live, and while no one was happy about shelling out big coin to watch 2.5 minutes of fight, I never felt as if I didn't get value for my money. I go to see a fight, not a boxing exhibition. And Mike delivered a fight, the way a good street fighter does. Much more entertaining than watching two guys dance and rope-a-dope for 12 rounds, because dancers and ropers are doing it like kids. There's another aspect of Tyson I found fascinating and admirable. You look at so many fighters, when they enter the arena, they do it like some Raja or the Queen of Sheba. They've got silk brocade robes and bling and handlers and stylists and sycophants. One of these days, I'm sure, four dudes will carry some contender into the ring sitting on a sedan chair. When Tyson entered the ring, he wore a towel with a hole cut in it, black trunks and boots, and was accompanied by his trainer and corner man. That was it. No bullshit. As fast and amazing as Tyson's rise to the top was, he crashed and burned in a terrible fashion. He was charged with rape, convicted, and did 3 years in prison. Compare and contrast that with another world-class athlete who found himself in a similar situation, Kobe Bryant. But Kobe never did a minute's time. Now, we weren't present for either event or trial, but consider a few observations. Mike Tyson was a kid of the streets, and he literally fought his way to fame and fortune and the pinnacle of athletic achievement. I'll take another minor digression here to posit that the greatest athletes on earth are probably boxers. If you've never tried to do it, do 3 rounds just throwing punches without anybody hitting back and see how you feel. And then imagine doing that for 12 rounds while some guy's trying to kill you. So why did Tyson wind up in jail and lose a career, while Kobe didn't? Well, Mike was out there all alone. Sure, he had money. But it was chump change compared to the dollar value of a top NBA franchise. So there were many, many people with money and influence who really did not want to see Kobe go down and take the Lakers' luster with him. And then there are the sports themselves. Lots of people don't like boxing. They think it's vulgar and crude and brutal. Some would like to see it outlawed. Basketball is nice. Colorful uniforms and cheerleaders and referees who enforce countless rules with whistle blows every few seconds of play. Boxing has damn few rules. And although this sport is rife with corruption, at its core it's more honest because in every other game, from tiddlywinks to football, the premise is the same. One team or one guy says to the other, "I'm gonna kick your ass." But only in boxing does that actually happen. Other sports are kind of watered down in a varnished form of the original sport, boxing. Since Tyson was in the business of kicking ass, maybe a jury figured he'd be more prone to a violent crime, whereas Kobe played a nice sport. Mike has a lisp and a busted tooth. Kobe has a perfect smile and is pretty articulate. Mike looks mean. Kobe looks nice. Tony Spumante spent a fair amount of time in Italy, and he hit me to a phrase they have over there, la bella figura. Roughly translated, it means to cut a beautiful figure. But its real meaning is that if you look good, really good, you can get away with anything. That's pretty true, isn't it? I once met Mike Tyson. It was St. Paddy's Day in New York, one of those crazy March days where it can't make up its mind whether to be rainy or cold or sunny and windy. I was on my way to a meeting and was stuck waiting for a break in the parade so I could cross Fifth Avenue. They set up barriers to hold back the crowds. I turned my back from one and was belly to belly with Tyson. He was still champion then. I was shocked and could only think to say, "You're Mike Tyson." He smiled and said, "Yes, I am." We shook hands. I said, "Happy St. Paddy's Day." Mike said, "You too," and asked if I was Irish. I said, "Yes," and asked if he was Irish. He laughed hard. As I walked away, I had a couple of thoughts. One, he didn't seem all that nasty. Very pleasant guy. Also, his hand was about the size of a leg of lamb. I could barely grip it. He had natural clubs at the end of his arms. The guy was custom-made to do exactly what he was doing. But back to bullying. What people have done is conflate just about any form of unpleasantness or aggression all under the banner of bullying. This is wrong. Nobody has an obligation to always be nice to everyone, or to compliment everything they do or make or wear or say or post. We have a right to be critical, or snotty, or even rude. And everyone has the right to respond in kind. Some kid in my daughter's fifth grade class was accused of cyberbullying by another parent because when the kid posted a picture of herself in her new outfit, the other kid simply did not like it. Not that the kid said, "Hey, your dress is ugly," or "You are." No, there was nothing negative. It was just that she failed to say anything positive. And so that's where our snowflake culture has now taken us. If you refuse to stroke some asshole's ego, you're a bully. It's a lot like North Korea, isn't it? Didn't that creepy little turd, Kim Jong-un, have some guy fed to the dogs because he failed to clap with enthusiasm at some deer leader rally? But the idiots at the forefront of the bullying cause, who have zero idea of what they speak, they believe that they can, with enough memes and bans and hand-wringing and idiotic catchphrases like, use your words, that they can somehow eliminate bullies. It doesn't work that way. Because some people are just hardwired to be bullies. And the only cure is to beat the shit out of them. Sometimes kill them, as in the case of mad dog criminals and political strongmen. So let's leave the traditional bullying aside for a bit and look at those who mislabel people bullies. We're talking about those who don't use violence but do abuse influence and power to fuck with people. Happens all the time and just about everywhere. In schools, no shortage of power-tripping teachers. Same in corporate America. Let's call them power-trippers. The power-trippers have the same demons driving them as full-on violent bullies. They just lack the physical abilities to manifest their malice with their fists. So they embed themselves in a government or corporation where they can manipulate and control others using the organization as their muscle. Power-trippers at their lowest wattage are merely annoying assholes. Power trippers in megaton calibers, well, they kill tens of millions of people. They all have something in common. They are utterly devoid of talent. But what they lack in talent, they make up for in ambition. They sometimes realize they can compensate and camouflage their lack of talent by becoming leaders. Power trippers also seek power because they're trying to compensate for some inadequacy. Tiny dick, BB balls, and so on. About 99% of politicians are power trippers. Where do they come from? Well, remember those pissants who ran student government in high school or college? They did not know how to do one fucking thing. Nothing. So they noticed this meaningless entity, student government, just a goofy construct to give talentless kids something to do. The people who can throw a good pass, or have a killer layup, or can shred a riff like Slash, or can debate someone through the floorboards, or tell a joke, or dance like their asses on fire, for Christ's sake, even the chess club people or the mathletes, they could all do something. And that gave them worth, and more importantly, self-worth. Because that's the stuff of true confidence, instead of bullshit and memes and social outrage. So, Matthew or Missy, no talent, sits there in school looking around and feeling lower than whale shit because of their lack of talent. And instead of developing some, they are shrewd enough to see, or maybe just intuit, that there is an arena where even no talents can excel. A kind of karaoke for so-called leaders, where nobody really listens, and those that do are probably tone-deaf. And that's student government. As in real government, damn few people vote anyway, because few people give a shit. They get into student government, maybe major in political science. Hey, there's an oxymoron for you. Politics is about as scientific as confetti in a tornado. So these future politicians sense this vacuum. They see an opening to assume a position of prestige and responsibility and power without really having to do very much to get it. Because remember, almost no one is listening or caring. Once they become class president or vice president or secretary, they get a taste, just a teensy-weensy one, of power. And it might be just something as small as telling everyone what time the meeting is about the Thanksgiving dance, or picking who gets to do the decorating in the gym. And they like that feeling of power, of telling somebody, anybody, what to do. So when you boil politics and government down to its essence, strip it to the bone, it's about a group of people who have this in common. I can't do anything. So I'll just tell you what to do. Plato said, those who seek power are not worthy of that power. And the old Greek was right. Is any field more rife with power trippers than politics? As so often happens at the show, when I'm just about ready to wrap up an episode, some manna falls from heaven. And this time it's from Europe, from a guy named Jean-Claude Juncker. He's the president of the European Union. Look this asshole up. He is the poster boy for an utterly talentless, unaccomplished, elitist punk who was born on third base and thought he hit a home run. A typical, worthless career politician who's never gotten his hands dirty, never broken a sweat, and most importantly, never taken a good, solid punch in his fucking face. Juncker, Junker, how perfect. You can't make these names up, can you? He is junk. And he's peeved about Brexit. Like all power-mad creeps, when he sees a possibility of losing power, he wigs out. And so he has just issued what? A threat? A promise? To the United States. That if the president does not get on board with his global agenda, he, the mighty Juncker, will break up the United States, beginning with Texas and Ohio. He's such a moron, he doesn't even realize that New York and California have practically already seceded. But talk about an ego, talk about hubris, talk about a candy ass in need of a beatdown. And as I mentioned in bonus episode 3, we'll be offering something new on the menu here at the Take No Shit Dojo. Beatdowns for the power trippers or bullies in your life. There is much wisdom to be garnered from the East. And in Singapore, they still lay the cane across the asses of the deserving. What's even more ironic is that the British brought the practice to Singapore. So it's fitting that Juncker, furious at Brexit, should be humiliated and abused, English style. But this is America, so we'll do it American style. I think Tony Spumante, my friend who has considerable experience in payback, should officiate, with his two torpedoes, Mikey and Joey, actually carrying out the punishment. As the proceedings begin, Tony will be elevated, seated at a desk on a platform, kind of like a judge. Mikey and Joey will escort Juncker into the dojo.
Is that asshole you wanted, boss? You cannot refer to me as an asshole, you. Shut the fuck up, frog.
I am not French. I am Luxembourgish.
Shut your fucking escargot hole. Bend over that pommel horse.
I will do no such thing. I am the leader of Europe.
Joey, pull his pants down.
But boss, that's gay.
It ain't gay in this context.
What do you mean? I thought we were in L.A.
Forget about it. Mikey, just lay into this disrespectful commie fuck.
No!
That's enough. Who wants lunch? Throw him out in a dumpster. The most difficult power tripper is usually the boss, because there's so much at stake, right? Especially for people with families. Of course, it's a good idea to keep a resume updated. It's an even better idea to snoop around your field periodically, just in case something goes sideways. You may be satisfied now, but who knows what tomorrow brings? People change jobs, get transferred, get sick, you just never know who you might be reporting to. I outlined dealing with a nightmare boss in episode 4, but she wasn't the only asshole I had to work with. Note my selection of preposition. Dojo tip. Never ever use the phrase, I work for so-and-so. The minute you say those words, you plant the seeds of indentured servitude. Keep the mindset of working with someone, never for someone. So I was at this company for a few years and doing well, and one day my pretty okay boss is replaced by an asshole, and his name was Jeffrey. How big an asshole? Well, how's this? A project came up that had to be done. Chop, chop. He asks me if I'll handle it, but I was going on vacation that week. Had a banging beach house rented in the Hamptons with my pals. It was going to be a seaside rodeo. This new boss begged me. I was the only one on staff with the chops who could do it right, he said, and he wouldn't forget me come promotion time, he said, and Zama Zama bullshit bullshit. So, I did it. Missed my vacation. Worked like 18 hours a day for 7 days straight to get this job finished on time. Everybody loved my finished product. It was a big success. Made Jeffrey look good, too. Couple months later, a promotion comes up. I was, without question, the strongest candidate. What happens? After telling me he wasn't sure I was committed to my job, he gives it to some fucking dork. I wanted to punch the piss out of him. Another dojo tip. When someone gets physical with you, retaliate instantly with zero thought of the consequences. But if it's not physical, counting to 10 is usually a good idea. So I counted at 10, and beyond. And pretty soon, I was offered a much better gig. And although I was thrilled, I was still unsatisfied that I'd been zoomed by my asshole boss. I wanted to lay some payback on him. Sometimes the force or the universe or whatever you want to call it just hands you a gift. The new company I was with did things first class. They had a skybox at Madison Square Garden, and I was there with a very pointy girlfriend and a client seeing Mike Tyson fight. As expected, Mike dropped his opponent in the first round. People were not happy. As I'm leaving the garden, who should appear but my ex-boss, Jerkoff Jeffrey. He was with a girlfriend, and she was most definitely not pointy. There was some meaningless chit-chat, and then one of my guys hands me my coat and says, "Here's your coat, Larry. You left it in the skybox."
"Skybox?"
says Jeffrey's date. And she looked at him like, what a loser. Then another of my new colleagues says, "Hey, Larry, let's go. The limo is waiting." You could not have scripted it any better. Jeffrey was shot down in flames by fate. It was sweet. And so, my friends, thank you once again for stopping by the dojo. And remember, power trippers are just bullies who haven't yet gotten their asses kicked. And if some power tripper is making your life miserable at work or school or anywhere, drop us a line at thatlarryshow@gmail.com or call us at 302-71-LARRY. We've got a sensei at the dojo who can help. Special thanks to the wonderful Patreonies. You keep the lights on. The Take No Shit Dojo store will open soon with some banging t-shirts you're gonna love. Check thatlarryshow.com. If you like what you hear, slide over to iTunes and throw us 5 stars. Want to dial yourself into rewards and bonus episodes? Swing by patreon.com/thatlarryshow and become a part of Dojo History. I'll see you next Tuesday, right here, at the crossroads of madness and enlightenment. And until then, take no shit.